Right now, Amazon has their heads in the clouds and wants you to keep your music there as well. We debate the state of cloud-based music storage and what that means to the music biz, the mobile biz, and the business of biz. Plus, we glance back at PodCamp Nashville 2011, oh so briefly, and what we're consuming. All this and more on episode 35 of the Nashville Tech Feed.
To the Batmobile.
Just like a crazy person.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
You're excited. You're feeling simple.
You have some mighty interesting people online.
No! Turn it on! Turn it back on!
Welcome to episode 35 of the Nashville Tech Feed, the show that dives into the tech news from Nashville and the news that affects Music City. I'm your host, David Baranja, independent web designer and developer and self-proclaimed tech geek. I guess I'm the host. I just said that. So
Wait a minute. We're 35 episodes in and you guess you're the host now?
I'm the host. You're not supposed to be introduced yet.
Sorry.
Everything you need to know about the show is at thenashvilletechfeed.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 615-280-0505. And now let me introduce my co-host after 35 episodes. Independent journalist and instructor at Belmont University's Media Studies Department and speaker's butler at PodCamp 2011, Lucas Hendrickson.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back is the operative key here. We've been was it a week ago, 2 weeks ago, PodCamp? It feels like, you know, it was yesterday, yes. And yet also a month ago. I have no idea. I have no relationship with time now. After that,
it was two weekends. Yeah, March 26th.
And that other person speaking is Paul Schatzkin. He is a author of The Boy Who Invented Television, A Story of Inspiration, Persistence, and Quiet Passion. He's also the founder of Cohesion Arts, Artist Management and Digital Distribution, and amazing blogger, can I just say.
Oh, thank you very much.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back.
All hardwired into the system today, so we shouldn't have any of the technical difficulties we encountered the last time we tried to do this.
Holy freaking cow, that was horrible.
It pretty much was.
Well, it was an experiment. I mean, again, most people don't know the story behind the last time we attempted to convene with our friends Dave Delaney and Kate O'Neill. Everybody coming in with a different audio capture configuration from far flung places around Middle Tennessee, and yeah, it didn't really work all that well.
For our audience,
well, it's out like
there,
that sometimes on the bleeding edge.
It is, exactly. Yeah. I was sitting outside an art gallery in Suwanee, Tennessee, leeching off of their Wi-Fi signal to try to go on Skype through my iPhone, and I'm shocked and amazed that it didn't work.
Yes, it's all coming back to me now.
Uh-oh. He's going to start having flashbacks.
For those listening out there, there was an attempt to record a pre-PodCamp 2011 episode of the Nashville Tech Feed that included Lucas, Paul Schatzkin, Dave Delaney, and Kate O'Neill. And pretty much what ended up was Survivor Edition of the Nashville Feed, when it was just pretty much me and Paul Schatzkin at the end.
Yeah, if it had gone on any longer, it would have been cannibalism.
We just kept getting voted off the island.
I'm glad it didn't happen, but maybe someday I'll try to hack something together, but it was not recoverable. So
just roll it back out again for PodCamp next year. Yeah, really. By that time, we should figure out.
That would be awesome.
You can recover it.
Well, let's dive right into our topic here. So Paul Schatzkin, which is on the line with us.
That's me.
Yes, that's you. Wrote a blog post about the Amazon Music Cloud Services. And mm-hmm. Paul, do you want to kind of just go over your post a little bit to explain what your thoughts about it? And I guess you got for people.
Well, that was written a couple of weeks ago. And my thinking on the subject has evolved a little bit, so I can probably encapsulate what I was saying there. I was essentially saying that this idea of individuals storing their own music collections in the cloud so that they can theoretically play their music wherever they go is just flat stupid. It's it's really a very poor utilization of what the technology is really capable of. And the way I'm expressing it now is simply by saying that the reality is that all the music you could ever want to listen to, with caveats and provisos, is already in the cloud. And what Amazon is doing is simply continuing to try to meter it out to you in 99-cent chunks, when in fact they should just be making it all available to you in some monthly subscription service so that you can truly listen to whatever you want to listen to, whenever you want to listen to it, wherever you are, assuming connectivity, which of course the cloud service that they're offering assumes, rather than continuing to nickel and dime it out to you, only offering you other ways of storing stuff that you have purchased for a dollar a track. So that's the essence of it. And then there was some follow-up in a second piece about how the music industry is not really being very sanguine about how the ultimate cloud service is going to work, because they're charging so little per stream rather than getting a percentage of what's actually going into the pot, that if that model persists, they won't even have the dinosaur bones to pick on.
Now, have you both tried the Amazon Cloud or the Amazon Music Locker then?
I have not, because I'm pretty much right in line with Paul on that. And again, this is, you know, part of our ongoing wake for Lala.com, in that, you know, Amazon's methodology, a browser-based locker, and obviously they're not going to have an iOS app. They were highly touting their ability to stream this stuff on Android. 5 gigabytes, unless you buy a full blown album, then you can bump it up to 20 gigabytes. It just felt like, you know, you look at it, you play around with it, and anybody who has spent any time trying to manage their digital media life, be it downloads or subscription service, it seems clunky. It seems limited. There would be bandwidth costs on a mobile device. Should they expand beyond the Android platform, which they're probably not going to be able to do, and yet there was all this breathless mainstream media coverage about Amazon getting serious with iTunes and getting serious about their digital media, you know, their music subscriptions. It was a whole bunch of hullabaloo for nothing, I feel like.
Now, do you think that, how can I say it? Don't you think it's just another piece of the puzzle, though, that it's another service?
I think that it's a stepping stone. I don't know that it's necessarily a piece of the puzzle. Implies that it's part of a permanent situation, a permanent structure. I don't think this idea of storing individual collections somewhere else where you then have access to it from a third location, I don't think that's a viable long-term concept. I think the only viable long-term concept is that all of the music you ever want to listen to is stored on somebody else's servers, and you have access to it whenever you want to listen to whatever you want to listen to from wherever you are. This idea of discrete collections, where I have my own collection of music, and now I have access to my own very limited collection of music because I've stored it on somebody else's servers, is just kind of ludicrous, because you're using a technology that is capable of storing everything and delivering to you whatever you want to hear whenever you want to hear it. And here's the kind of overriding unspoken fact is, you know, you can only really listen to one thing at a time. And as Lucas was saying, it's the organizational constructs around what you want to listen to at any one time that companies are trying to sort out and arrive at solutions with. But ultimately, the solution is just make it all available and let me press a couple of buttons and listen to whatever I want to. on a moment's notice, on demand, spontaneously, without having to prepare a whole lot of thought about putting a whole lot of thought into what am I going to store in the cloud as opposed to what do I have on my local machine as opposed to what do I carry on my iPod. Just put it all out there and let me have access to it and stop nickel and diming it out to me.
It's absolutely true. I mean,
the thing that they are trying to do that I think Amazon is doing that they could get around if they wanted to they're playing right into Apple's game here is they are trying to perpetuate the 99-cent download for as long as they possibly can.
Sure.
The whole construct of this particular cloud service is you continue buying the tracks and we will store them for you somewhere else. And I think the whole concept of buying tracks is potentially obsolete.
Well, and as part of their deal, if you're buying those tracks from Amazon, you have access to them on the cloud locker, but it doesn't count against your overall storage space. Am I right? I seem to recall something like that.
Yeah, so right. The albums that you buy from Amazon, you can store in their locker for free. It's only the stuff that you add from your collection that you've purchased somewhere else.
Sure.
That you're paying for, in theory.
Or all the bootlegs you've downloaded from someplace that you can't, can't possibly duplicate on their service.
That's right. Your entire Beatles catalog that you got from Napster in 1999.
The Purple Chick, remixes of Sgt. Pepper or whatever. Yeah, we're gonna hear from Steve and the Beatles people here shortly, but that's all right. Again, this is the thing that frustrates me, and I'm an active. I like to consider myself an active music fan, but there are you have to do so much research now. You have to do so much trial and error and nickel and diming to try to find your environment on which you can have the things that you want when you want them. There's still no one service that can provide you most of that on-demand stuff. Mog and RDO and Slacker and all these other things that have bits and pieces of the overall catalog are great. Are great. They're all great attempts. I don't mind the idea of paying $10 a month for streaming or cloud service or whatever. Just
make, put it all up there
just
for
put
me.
Put it up there, yeah.
Stop hassling it. Yeah. Now there's a couple of other observations and then one point. One of the ironies here is that what Amazon is essentially doing is what Michael Robertson tried to do, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago when he had the MP3 Tunes locker. Mm-hmm. And the major labels just came down all over him, because what he was doing was permitting you to put a CD in a drive. Then that would prove that you owned a CD, and then it would, rather than you storing your file on somebody else's server and using up more server space, it would recognize that you owned that CD and then let you listen to it from their server, their cloud version of it. And the labels hated that idea.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting that Amazon has gone ahead with this without the label's consent, and I do think that's one of the good things about it is they're just giving the labels the what for on this, and if the labels don't like it, well, let them argue with Amazon over that, mm-hmm. And then so following through with that thought is the wondering if the labels are actually letting you store stuff, or recognizing that you have stuff in your collection that they have on their cloud service and giving you access to that.
I think it's the latter. Go ahead. I think it's the latter. I think the vagaries of that of the deals and of the TOS of the cloud service. If you dug far enough into it, you'd probably see that was the methodology that you are. Essentially leasing access to their for free to their to what they already have
to their file their one file and particularly if you're buying a track from Amazon for 99 cents and then they're storing it in the locker for you,
mm-hmm.
they're probably giving you access from your locker of the file that they store, their one cloud copy.
Oh yeah,
rather
it's not
than you having your own copy somewhere.
Exactly. You're not accessing your, you know, 3.5 meg file of that. You're accessing, you know, a line of code that's pointing it to their service.
Here's where everybody's missing the boat on this. And I mentioned this, I think, in the follow up, the sequel blog post, which was the one about the dinosaurs attacking. Russ Krupnik at the Digital Summit 2 summits ago, I guess that would have been 2009, talked about how the average music buyer, this is a startling statistic, but the average music consumer purchases an average of $40 a year in hard physical musical goods. It's like they buy like 2.5 CDs a year.
Is that 1999 or now numbers?
That was in 99. Okay. I'm sure it's less now. Okay.
In 09.
So that was probably like an 08 statistic or something like that.
Okay.
But that's a startling statistic to those of us who are active in the music space and listen to tons of music, that the average expense is so small.
Yeah.
What that's telling us is that at $15 a CD or somewhere at $10, $15, $20 a CD, music is very expensive. So imagine a scenario where instead of charging $15 or $1 a track, you're now charging somebody $10 a month so that they can listen to everything they want to listen to. Suddenly at $10 a month, music becomes very cheap. But instead of $40 a year, they're spending $120. You have tripled the size of the business just by making it all available all at once. And acknowledging that they can't listen to it all at once. They can only listen to one tune at a time. They're only going to listen to a certain number of tunes per month. And that $10 should be distributed according to the number of tunes that they're listening to. And then suddenly the pie gets much larger and the slices of the content providers get much larger. But instead they're continuing to protect this dying, archaic, buy-the-unit paradigm and coming up with new ways, new constructs that they build around that you must purchase things by the unit. And if they would just kind of open their eyes a little bit, they would see that they're on the threshold of a much larger industry than what they're getting with the way that they're doing it.
See, I agree and am a little baffled by that approach. You know, because I read that post, and you lost me a little bit on how to at least the final hurdle in this is always going to be how do you divvy up the pie,
mm-hmm.
and you know. How do you divvy it up by the number of tracks that an individual user listens to per month? You know, gets into such ridiculously, ridiculous variations on that algorithm that I don't know that we're there technologically to be able to do that accurately enough so that everybody who should get paid out of that pie does. But I do think that if they do want to maintain a base of users, a base of music fans, they're going to have to figure out how to do that from a technological standpoint, as opposed to a per unit standpoint, like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a long time coming. And if really, and we all sit around here every time we convene, and we are Apple fanboys. If there's going to be a company that does that, it's going to be Cupertino.
I would agree. I think that's you're probably right that it's a complex algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
My apprehension right now is that even Apple is trying to preserve the per unit distribution model for as long as they can,
sure.
while in the background they're trying to make something else work. But yeah. I don't think it needs to be all that complicated that a user's contribution is divided according to how much he has listened to whatever he has listened to,
yeah.
and then is distributed accordingly. And in a perfect world, in the ultimate world, it's distributed automatically to all the stakeholders.
The thing is, though, we
then
see...
it's a matter of reliability and how can I trust these numbers?
Exactly. The thing is, we know and we see every day, if you look in your spam filter, about how some company, some organization, whatever, spoofs the numbers. And any streaming service right now is still in toddler phase, if not even newborn phase. So there some smart person affiliated with, some indie band would figure out a way to jack those numbers up and throw off the whole schmear for everybody involved in it. And so there would be, there would be a lot of opportunities for fraud in the midst of all that, that's one of the pieces of the equation that I'm sure makes the labels and those companies reticent to put a solution like that in place.
And then the other thing that would be missing is some way to connect the people who are listening to what they are listening to.
Sure.
One of the quarrels with Apple now is they're beginning to offer subscriptions through the App Store, through their iPad apps, and the purveyors of those subscriptions don't get any data on who their subscribers are. That subscription data all belongs to Apple.
Uh-huh.
So well, we know that the music.
The credit card data belongs to Apple. They do have those. They've worked in but it's still an opt-in thing on the side of the consumer and not required for the publisher side of it. But they can get a name and an email address, and the publishing company can communicate with them that way. But that's only if the subscriber opts into it. So I can totally see from a publishing company standpoint, along with the 30% that they're skimming right off the top, why they have some reticence about putting subscription models out there for publications, because that's their lifeblood, is being able to continue on that relationship with the consumer. It would be the same way with music companies as well. So
the question that I'm having here is that we're talking about a universal jukebox, a celestial jukebox, as Paul would say. Now, to get all the labels together to agree to that, to do that, suddenly it would become an antitrust issue, correct?
Sure.
So how could they do that?
Why is it an antitrust issue? Because they're all... I mean, why is it any more of an antitrust issue than the fact that they are all licensing their content to iTunes or Amazon?
But
it's just a different way for that service to be delivering the content that's on their servers.
So you're saying more like each label has their own server that would connect to this one company's servers?
No, as they do now. I mean, this is what apparently is holding up the introduction of Spotify in the United States. These deals exist in Europe for Spotify, where the labels are licensing their content to a service that makes it available on a subscription or a free with advertising basis. And it would be the same thing here. They would all be individually licensing their content. There wouldn't be any kind of collusion or in theory at least, I don't think the labels would be owning the service that they are distributing the content through. There wouldn't be that kind of vertical integration where the labels all get together and own the service and then provide their content to it. I think it would be a third party or multiple third parties, as it is now with RDO and Mog and Rhapsody and Napster and the other services that are available.
If there were going to be antitrust concerns about that, it would have come in the early aughts when you did have the individual individual labels at that point. It was the big six, I guess, that were all trying to do their own, branded services. And that's the only thing that they had, you know, they only had their company's acts on those services, and they never took off.
That's not a solution in my eyes, because you can only get some of what you want from each destination.
Exactly.
I want to be able to go to one place and get everything. And I'm actually pretty content with the way things are working for me, at any rate right now. As I mentioned in the blog posts, the typical procedure for me is if there isn't anything particular I want to listen to, I'll go to a Pandora channel. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly a cloud-based service. And then when I hear something that catches my ear, I look to see what it is, and then I go to Mog.com and listen to an album by that particular group or artist. So I don't want to say 100% seamless, but it's a nearly seamless process for me now.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy that the technology exists. It's just surprising to me that they're continuing to use the technology and parcel it out in such a backward way.
Yeah. See, I'm much the same way. I was a Rhapsody subscriber for years.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was one of my primary tools to do what it is that I do. You know, if I was interviewing a band that was coming through town and didn't have time to get a hard copy from a publicist or whatever, go to Rhapsody, listen, do my research, and move on. I dropped them when I discovered Lala again. Rest in peace. And that idea that what I thought was most revolutionary about that service wasn't necessarily their music mover software, which did much the same kind of thing that this cloud service does, in that it matches your iTunes library and duplicates it or duplicates links to it, you know, available through their service. But what I always thought was the revolutionary piece of it was this ability to buy unlimited web streams of a song or album for 10 cents a throw or a dollar an album.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, if I wanted to have that browser-based experience, if I was just sitting at my computer listening, I just pull it up, boom, it's right there.
Yeah, they had an iPhone app that was in the breach when they were acquired by Apple, and that never got off the ground.
Yeah. And it wasn't perfect, but it was a lot farther along under one umbrella than I think any of the players that are out there right now are doing. And you could still purchase off of Lala as well if you wanted the full blown tracks. You could get a 320 bit encoded MP3. And have the digital files available for your management.
Do you guys think that these new services are going to catch on more than we think they are? Because, I mean, we're really kind of the bleeding edge when it comes to technology and even probably music in general.
These kinds of things have been around for more than 10 years. These subscription services, Rhapsody was out there for the longest time, and they never got any traction. They're still out there, and Mog and RDO have come along and are trying to fight for those dimes as well. I just don't think, it's much like the adoption of satellite radio. People aren't conditioned to think about the idea of subscribing to their music. I don't think they've taken off.
So as long as we continue to look at the future through the prism of the present, we will not be able to foresee a time when that kind of a transition could take place. But my unfortunate habit is that I tend to look back on the future from someplace even farther in the future. So who would have believed that we'd be sitting here now, 10 years ago, that we'd be sitting here now talking about the dominance of digital downloads, legal downloads for 99 cents a track. So, it has taken a surprisingly long time to catch on, and that's one of the things that I do like about the fact that Amazon is trying to bring people into this space, that it is slowly beginning to shift the consciousness away from the need to own stuff to the ability to have access to stuff. I think that as people begin to try different things and see how difficult it is, when they try one more thing, they'll say, "Oh, well, that works." And then things will begin to get some momentum. But it could be another 2, 3, 5 years. I don't know. I'm happy with what I've got now. I feel like I've lived to see it. You know, I've lived to see the Model T of the Celestial Jukebox.
So let me throw a monkey wrench in there. With the internet is moving to the mobile devices, and they're saying, I think, is it this year that more people are accessing the internet via mobile devices than actually computers? And what about the carriers now doing the bandwidth caps? Will we have the cloud services available, or will people go back to loading it onto their phone because they're not going to waste their 2 gig for music listening?
I think it'll go through two stages. I think we're going to go through a period where the service providers are trying to maximize their revenue by putting caps on, and then they will begin to get competitive and remove the caps. The caveat with that assertion is that we are gravitating toward fewer and fewer providers. Mm-hmm. Now, AT&T wants to acquire T-Mobile. We may wind up in a duopoly of Verizon and AT&T, in which case there may not be any competitive advantage. But I think my hunch is they're going to continue to build out bandwidth, and that it's not going to be the problem that we might imagine that it will be from this vantage point. But I think you're right that is a variable that could throw a wrench in the works. It's hard to predict how that'll turn out.
But if we get to that duopoly kind of situation, I wonder if we will start to see the sort of competitive pricing and competitive services model that we face now with our television capabilities as well between Comcast and AT&T, you know, pricing out the bundle for X number of months, and then they jack the price back up, you know, after your 12 months or 6 months are over. And yet I just saw, you know, on the cover of CNN.com today talking about how Verizon is phasing out their 1 year contracts, basically making their new customer sign a 2 year deal regardless. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we do start to get that bundle idea, with data as part of the equation, be the norm in the mobile space. It, up to now, it's just been minutes and it's been text messaging. I think we'll start to see data folded into that as well.
I don't want voice and minutes. I just want data. Give me
I know, man. Most people do. Yeah. So
I understand you can use this thing to make phone calls.
That's what I'm told.
What?
Yeah.
I haven't done it in a while, but.
Well, I think we've kind of burned through the topic pretty good. I mean, we've gone from Amazon, which is kind of meh.
Yeah.
To the state of the mobile, you know, the all you can eat services. Now, Lucas, Paul or Lucas, do you subscribe to any of them anymore?
I played around with it earlier this month. Rhapsody's in the middle of a promo deal, 2 months of a free trial. So, you know, brought my Rhapsody subscription back from the dead. Tried RDO again because they had a desktop app, and I have a preference for having an external desktop app as opposed to listening to these things in the browser. I don't know why. And then I ran through Mog again, the free trial. But the thing that bugs me about that is they do want a credit card number from you up front. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that gives me pause. It just does. I've tried them all before. I'm trying them all again, and I still haven't found one that suits all my needs.
No,
I've been using Mog pretty consistently for about, I don't know, maybe 6 months now. And I find almost all that I look for in it. I use it mostly now on the mobile, on the iPhone. And even when I'm home, I use it because it's so easy to send the signal from, it's easier to send the signal from the iPhone to the AirPlay Express unit in the house to get it on the stereo speakers. I have to bring up another program on my Mac to send it from the browser to the stereo speaker. So it's actually easier now to do it from the mobile. And that's one of the surprises to me, is I always imagined the Celestial Jukebox would be some rack-mounted device that would have a voice-activated microphone in your living room, and you'd walk up to this machine and say, Beatles, Abbey Road, make it loud. And then it would start come together, it would start booming through your speakers. But instead, it's this little thing that's smaller than a deck of cards. And you carry it around in your pocket, and you press a couple of buttons, and there it is.
Sure.
Well, I happen to use RDO, and I like it quite a bit. One of the things I feel like these services are missing, and that's, again, coming back to Lala.com, which was so excellent in what it did. By the way, that was episode 18 of the Nashville Tech Feed, and we'll have that in the show notes.
where we waxed, I don't want to say rhapsodic, but
eulogized.
We eulogized, exactly.
Yeah, the title was Lala.com, the best music site you've never heard of is going dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is rediscovery of what you already own. Like every one of these services has a function, like RDO and Lala had it, and I don't know if Mog has it, but that you can kind of, it'll take a snapshot of your library on your computer and kind of recreate that in the cloud, so you kind of have a familiar starting point. And I kind of like something for rediscovery, you know. And I think that's the next step for these services, is rediscovery of the stuff you already have. And mm-hmm. help introduce you to the new stuff. Not just what your friends are listening to, but say it's like, if you like this, you might like that.
Right, and then discovering that that in that equation is something you've had on your hard drive for 10 years that you haven't listened to. Because remember, you can only listen to one thing at a time.
You could listen to two, but then you would be doing like Flaming Lips or something like that. So,
okay, we'll stop there.
Yeah, let's finish it up with what we're consuming segment, which is we're sharing with the audience things that we're consuming, such as music, books, videos, you name it. So, Paul, why don't you start first?
Well, I'm still working my way through The Widow of the South by Robert Hicks. I'm and watching Ken Burns' The Civil War series, which we ran on PBS last week. You know, tomorrow, as we speak today, tomorrow is Fort Sumter Day, the 150th anniversary of the surrender, the bombardment and surrender of Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor, which marked the beginning of the Civil War in 1861. And I'm involved in a project where we're producing a collection of songs called the 1861 Project, which attempts to imagine the lives of the ordinary people who lived through and fought the Civil War. So I've been spending quite a bit of time doing some Civil War research and study. And so I'm working my way through The Widow of the South, which is the story of the Carnton House plantation in Franklin, which was used as a hospital during the Battle of Franklin late in 1864. So that's what I'm reading. I've been watching, like I say, the Ken Burns series, the Civil War, and I have my TiVo set up to record anything that has the words Civil War in the program description. So I've been finding all kinds of strange things that way. And go ahead.
I was going to say, plus, you've probably seen a lot of VH1 Top 20 Countdown with local band The Civil Wars on it.
That hasn't shown up yet? But I did find an episode of a program on the History Channel, I think it was Civil War Journal, which was mostly about prostitution during the Civil War.
Now, so, did you get the Guns N' Roses video Civil War as well?
Did they make Say it? Again?
The Guns N' Roses video? Didn't they make video for Civil War?
That hasn't shown up yet, but I'm sure it will. Apparently, Civil War is a very common phrase, because almost every night I look at the TiVo, it's recording something.
Wow.
I hope I don't fry my hard drive with Civil War stuff.
Now, I see you're watching Justified. Did you know that the series is now on Netflix?
I did not know that it's on Netflix, but why would I care? I have it on FX, and I record it on my TiVo, and it's there whenever I need to watch it.
Oh, well, it's on demand with no commercials on streaming Netflix.
Oh, well, okay. Is it in HD?
I believe so.
I don't think so. Well, Netflix streaming is not in HD.
Okay, 720. That's not really high def. But okay, moving right along.
Yeah.
Lucas.
Well, that's close enough. The 720p is considered high def.
Lucas, what are you consuming?
I have been on a somewhat of a reading kick of late, finally. Ripped through Bill Carter, the national media reporter for the New York Times, his book, The War for Late Night, when Leno went early and television went crazy, looking at the whole Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno debacle from last year. Great, great book. He did a similar book on Letterman and Leto and the fight over the Tonight Show back in 1995 called The Late Shift. And this is his unofficial sequel to that, with the whole Conan taking over the Tonight Show for 7 months before getting thrown under the bus by NBC, unfortunately. And then I've also been reading a book called What is Happening to News by Jack Fuller, a former editor of the Chicago Tribune, who, after taking his buyout from the then Sam Zell-led Tribune Company, in other words, the asylum being run by the inmates, took a step back and has started taking a look at information overload from a neuroscience standpoint, and is really kind of diving into how we consume what we consume, specifically on a news media basis thing from the look at looking at it from a neuroscientific standpoint. So as soon as I figure out what all that means, I'm sure I'll learn a lot from it. But it's a pretty compelling read as well. And still making my way through the late century Doctor Who stuff on my Roku. So that's what I'm consuming.
Love Doctor Who. And what I'm consuming is a book called How Pleasure Works by Paul Bloom. And it's a psychology book just on basically how pleasure works. And I'm in the part that talks about cannibalism and how people get pleasure from that.
Okay, then.
Well, on that note.
And then the other thing I'm consuming is a new, I don't know, it's relatively new. It's an iPhone app called Waze. And it's a social GPS app, which I find fascinating. It's like your typical...
Spell that.
Waze, Waze.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... It uses social people on the map point out objects and police and slow traffic, and it's all live data. And it's probably one of the best GPS apps I've used that I didn't have to pay for. So I guess it would be the only one. But you can have groups, and when there's a cop ahead and it's hidden, when you get within a half a mile, it says speed trap ahead, which is awesome. So,
wow.
And I created a group out there called Nashville, I believe it's Nashville Tech Geek. So if you're on Waze, find the Nashville Tech Geeks group and join up, and we'll...
I am downloading it to my iPhone even as we speak.
Thanks, Waze, Paul. Is a social mobile application providing free turn-by-turn navigation based on the live conditions of the road. Interesting.
And the fascinating thing about it is it maps the roads to make it better. And if you're on a road that somebody else hasn't been on, your little car turns into like a Pac-Man. And it starts gobbling dots. And it's points-based. So there's like points in that. And they throw the gaming aspect in what a lot of these apps do. But the nice thing is on the website, I've set it up that it tracks me. So I no longer have to do mileage anymore when I'm driving for taxes. I've got it all recorded, and I just look at it every month and just write it down. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know if that's legal.
Now, that sounds like something to be useful for a traveling musician.
Well, that's a brilliant idea. So that's
the it's all, it also sounds like something to be used to track wayward spouses as well. But that's that's neither here nor there.
Well, let's not go there. So, well, that wraps up our show, guys. So let me just finish up a few things here. You know, you can find everything that we've talked about and probably a lot less at NashvilleTechFeed.com. And we were part of the TechPodcast.com network until we got on suspension for not mentioning them in one frickin' show.
Jeez.
For the special PodCamp edition, they put the red flag on us. Yeah. We'd been there for 8 hours broadcasting or doing whatever it is that we did for PodCamp and neglected to mention them, and they were upset by that. So, sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll be...
We'll probably cut
off,
that part out of
taken off suspension. I feel like so high school. But you can leave comments at comments@nashvillefeed.com, and you can leave us a voicemail at 280-0505. And we would like to thank the one listener that's listening to us live. And hopefully next time we'll have a chat going and do lots of cool things. So, Paul, how can we find you online?
CohesionArts.com.
Lucas,
or Twitter, Driver49.
But do you tweet?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tweet.
Okay, just making sure.
Not real consistently, but sometimes a lot and sometimes not so much.
Well, start tweeting your articles when you post them.
Oh, I do.
Okay, make sure you do that, because anybody out there, follow Driver49 on Twitter and make sure you read the stuff that he posts, because it's some really fine writings and musings. Lucas, how can we find you?
I am at largelandmammal.com and also Lucas Types on Twitter.
That's not a blog.
That's not a blog. No. And I steadfastly refuse to believe that that's a blog. And I've held that position for years, so it's not late coming to this thing.
Oh, no. But just for people out there.
Sure. It's not a blog.
And I'm David Baranja, and you can find me at blogging at the Nashville Tech Feed. NashvilleTechFeed.com, where I just posted an article on the three things that an artist needs on their bio page of their website. So go check that out.
Check that out.
And go find me on Twitter. It's MDave on Twitter. So, Lucas, how are we going to end the show?
As per usual, I have no clue.
You're right, and I'm going to play some crazy little thing. So here we go.
So, you an artist or something?
Yeah.
You do paintings or...
Yeah, paintings.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
What do you paint mostly?
I don't know, just people and fruit and shit.